yen yin pe sun nam ti. Do la pen chir sang ye rupa shu.
Okay. So we've been studying the Wheel of Knives. Oh, before we start, some of you asked for a Vajrasattva practice. Vajrasattva is purification practice. It's a low-level tantric practice. And it's very effective at getting rid of bad karma that you've already got. If you do it right, you can prevent bad karma that you generate during a particular day from doubling that day if you do the practice. And that's also very good. It's a way to keep things kind of under control. So we'll do that in the afternoon class. We're going to finish the course this morning. There's two more readings in your text that are sort of under class 10. But they're straightforward, they're short, I was going to say cute. That's not a good way to describe it, but they're nice. So you can read those on your own. Okay. You don't have to come to the afternoon class if you don't want to. So. When we started yesterday, I said that Master Dharmarakshita prostrates to Yamantaka, this wrathful deity. And he does. But he starts off with a normal prostration. Typically, when a writer starts a text of some sort, they prostrate to somebody. A person they prostrate to kind of gives an indication of what the subject matter of the text is going to be. If it's Prajaparamita, we prostrate to the writer, prostrates to Manjushri, and so on. And here, Master Dharmarakshita, first of all, prostrates to the. I should tell you what I'm show you what I'm talking about. There we go. He prostrates to the three jewels. So say Kunchok, Sum, La, Chakse, Lo. Yeah. I prostrate to the three jewels. Kunchok means literally rare and supreme. It translates the Tibetan word ratna, which means jewel. Normally, the Tibetan word for jewel is Norbu. So when translators would see Ratnu, they would write down Norbu, with one exception. If it was the three jewels, then they'd use Kunchok. It was something they decided early on. They wanted to give a meaning translation as opposed to a literal one. So rare and supreme is what they came up with. So it's the three jewels in Tibetan is Kunchok Sum instead of Norbu Sum. Sum means three. La, when you see la like that, it often means two. It's called a locus, role particle. The locus is where something happens in Tibetan. The object of emotions are in the locus grammar category, and so on. If you're going from something to something, the locus is where you're going from. Like you'd say, from Munich to Berlin, it would be Munich La, Berlin, what's the source? Good morning. Are you feeling better?
Yes.
Good. Berlin Lay, okay? That's a little short Tibetan lesson. So he prostrates to the three jewels. Chakshal, we did yesterday is prostrate, I prostrate. Lo, in this case, is a sentence terminator. It means we're done talking about that. And for those of you who are interested in Tibetan, to end a sentence, it doesn't always happen, but if you want to make sure that you've completed a sentence or a thought or something like that, you take the last letter of the previous word, la in this case, and put an O vowel over it. So when you see a sentence ended in lo or any kind of a thing with an O over it, and the letter is the last letter of the previous syllable, you know the sentence is done. This is helpful for people beginning Tibetan. And when it doesn't happen, you kind of have to guess. And it usually doesn't happen. So it looks like Tibetan simple, but it's not. But it is. Not. And then he's got this line, say, trouble.
Trouble.
Nela pa. La. Sonche.
Sonche.
Korlo.
Korlo.
Shechawa.
Shechawa.
Yeah. Trouble was enemy. We had that yesterday, I think. Nela pa is to strike or attack, like so. La is at. Sonche we had is the. A knife or a blade of some sort, and korlo is the wheel. So the wheel of knives, we're doing that. And shejawa is a canned expression. It means it is called. So at the beginning of a work, you'll go blue something and see shejawa, and that means, okay, what's happened in front of that's the name of the work. We're calling it that. Se trovo. Shin she she.
Shin she she.
La.
La.
Chakselo.
Chakselo.
And this is the one we had yesterday. So this line that I said was the prostration is actually the third line of the text. So he's prostrated to the three jewels. He's given us the name of the text. And now he's prostrating to Yamantaka or Bhairava, this thing. You know, now most of the Lojong texts are kind of sweet, you know, soft and furry, you could say, something like, well, like that, you know, they, you kind of can cuddle up to them and they're really nice. So, this one, as you've probably noticed by now, is a little bit different from that kind of a thing. It's a little more pointed, like a cactus, you know, where I live, we have these cactuses and you don't want to get too close to them because if you touch one, all of their spines just sort of find their way into you and it's hard to get out. And you look kind of silly on top of that. In the last class, we were talking about all the bad things that happened to us, where they come from, which is you shoot this boomerang out, you know, when we do something, and in a lifetime or 10 or 20 years or several lifetimes, it goes back and whap, you know, it comes from us. And now the penny drops. Dharma Rakshita is saying, now I know who you are, this enemy of mine. And he's going to start to do something drastic about it. And he's going to call on the angry one, you know, Bhairava, Lord of Death. He's the slayer of the Lord of Death. So, and this is where we start the class. I'll leave that up there. He says, this is verse 51. We've covered 50 verses. We've got 69 to go, I think. I think it's 119. Since this is the way things are, meaning since everything that happens to me comes from me to begin with, since this is the way things are, I've finally realized just who my enemy is. I've caught the thief who lay in wait and deceived me with his trap. He's a masquerader, fooling others and fooling himself as well. Fooling himself, the self-cherishing self, me, is fooling me as well. I think he's somebody else. I see it now. He's the habit I have of grasping to myself, and of this there is no doubt. So the enemy, we finally realize, and realize down deeply. It's a realization. It isn't, oh, God, I think that's the way it is. You know, it's, ah, you know, the English expression, British especially, the penny drops. You know, like you're putting coins in a phone, and one may stick there for a while, and the operator answers, didn't you remember how this was? Yeah. You know, and you put some more coins in there, the operator asks you, and then the operator, when the connection is made, finally presses a button, and the coins drop, and you can start. That's where the expression comes from. The penny drops. Ah, I get it, you know. This is not a pleasant realization. It's kind of horrifying, actually. So this self-cherishing self is in fact total illusion. It does not exist, but we've been looking at it all of our existence as if it did. And that's the masquerade. That's the fooler, the person who's pulling the wool over our eyes. We can use all these expressions, you know. And he doesn't exist at all. So we grasp, you know, we think it's there and we grasp to it as being there. We grasp at everything else. Our self-cherishing mind is grasping at everything as being real. So we can blame it for our problems, not the other way around. There is a yelling boss. It's not my fault. My husband is mad at me and he's a jerk. It's not my fault. And so on and so on and so on. Political leaders are dumb and corrupt and everything else, and it's not my fault. You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It finally is coming in here. Yet there's nothing that's self-existent, and that is the cause of my problems. If things were self-existent, I'd really have somebody else to blame, and it wouldn't be my fault at all. But things are not self-existent. There isn't anybody to blame. There never has been anybody to blame, and there never will be anybody else to blame for my problems, or my happiness for that matter either. You know, we're sticking on problems. That's what we're trying to fix. In the wheel of life, and here we go, at the 1 o'clock position, is what? Who's that? What does it look like?
Old man. But that's on the other side.
Does a blind guy ring any bells?
Yes.
Yeah. That's ignorance. There are 12 steps in the wheel of life ending up with death. It starts with ignorance. Boom, boom, boom. And it goes through a whole bunch of stuff. The picture is about 4, 5, 6, and 7 o'clock, and 8 o'clock, maybe even 2, depict how our sensory apparatus comes into being while we're in the womb. and the things that things the senses perceive. Consciousness is up somewhere there too, but it starts with ignorance. We are blind. We don't know the way things exist. We can't see the way things exist. We're ignorant of that. The true nature of things, we haven't a clue, and never have had, and don't have, but we will have at some point. So, by realizing that there are no other people who cause our problems, we kind of get rid of this ignorance in the process. It could be the other way around too, but all these things just kind of happen at once. Aging and death are not necessarily guaranteed to happen. At any place on these 12 steps of the Wheel of Life, if you break one of the links, everything after it ceases to be. It turns out, though, that it's almost impossible to break any one of those links. You can break the first one. And by doing that, everything else just ceases to be. The next one, I think, is karma. I don't have it here, but it's a guy making pots, which is us making our life, okay? Karma makes our life. Because of ignorance, we do things that we shouldn't do. In this sense, and in a lot of Buddhist teachings, karma is by nature bad. And they say Buddhists don't generate karma. They, of course, do generate karma, but not the kind we're worried about, not the kind we generate. The karma they have is often called wisdom or something like that. Not the wisdom we know either. But because of ignorance, the things we do create our life for us, and it's not good. The guy's blind. What kind of a life can he create? Well, certainly one that doesn't see anything, right? Correctly. So, now, understanding emptiness is enough to get us to nirvana, meaning out of samsara, out of the cycle of life. When we reach nirvana, we do it in this body, but when we die, we're in the state of, what's it called, nirvana without remainder. When you reach nirvana in the body, we have nirvana with remainder, this being the remainder. I think I said that early in the course. When we die, we're in a state of meditation where we will remain forever after, meditating on our own bliss. And that's not too shabby. But there's nobody else around. We're aware of no one else. Now, it turns out after a billion eons or something like that, a Buddha's got to come by and shake your shoulder. You don't have a shoulder, but shake your shoulder. Wake up, you know, there's more to do. And you'll come back and do the whole thing over again and reach enlightenment. Okay, so that being said, next verse. Now let's see the wheel of knives of karma. Cut his skull, you know, O angel of wrath, now cut his skull, cut thrice. Stand like a god on widespread legs. This is Yamantaka he's talking about. A knowledge of the two truths. So Yamantaka's two legs are the two truths, ultimate reality and conventional reality. Conventional reality is this, you know, it's the way we perceive things. It's the way we think. It's conventional. We say it's conventional because this is the way we communicate. It's the only way that our very weak minds can organize things so that we can talk to each other, so that we can understand things. We can understand things, even though we're not seeing them correctly. We can understand them. We can talk about Oktoberfest. You know, we can talk about security. We can talk about love. We can talk about everything. We can send people to the moon and so on. And that's really nice. And that's enough to get us to the point where we can reach nirvana as well. It's through a conventional understanding that we can slip into a direct perception of emptiness, which is not conventional. That's ultimate. What's the Tibetan for conventional reality? And if you don't remember the Tibetan, what does it mean?
Deceptive reality?
Yes. Deceptive. Kunso. Say it. Kunso.
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 Kunso. All deceiver or deceiver of all is what it literally means. What's the deceiver? Our way of perceiving things. We say deceptive reality, and that's not bad. There's nothing wrong with a reality. The reality is not deceiving us. What's deceiving us is our imperfect mind, which is the tendency to grasp at things as self-existent. So even though we have a really crappy understanding of our world, we can use that to get to enlightenment. That's very nice. Convenient, we might say. But we have to get rid of that first. We have to change our behavior. Lojong is about learning to have a good heart. No, it's about having a good heart. Geshe-la always slaps us down when he says, learning to do that. He says, don't learn, do it. The implication is you can't sit down and learn it. You have to do it. That's how you learn it. I didn't finish this. Then he goes on, we're talking about what Yamantic is supposed to do. Stare in hatred with two eyes, which are method and wisdom. He has two bulging eyes. He's got a third eye too up here, but two bulging eyes, which represent method and wisdom. Method has to do with bodhisattva activities. Wisdom is what we learn about emptiness. Those produce the two bodies, the Dharmakaya, the wisdom body, and the form body, which is the emanation body, or the paradise body of a Buddha. Open your jaws and show your fangs. So he's got teeth coming down here and teeth coming up, well, fangs up here, which are the four powers of confession. So immediately this monster is telling us, or telling himself actually, because we're the monster, telling this jerk we finally discovered who really, you know, what they really are. Use the four powers. Purify your karma. He's already told us the karmic correlations. And now he says, use those. Purify the karma. Wherever it says from now on in those 40 verses before, do this. That's what he's talking about, which is the power of
understanding.
You have four
emptiness.
Powers?
Understanding emptiness. Power of foundation, basic.
Nope. All right, four powers. The base, understanding emptiness.
Yeah. Intelligent regret.
Regret.
Restraint.
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 Antidote.
Antidote. So when it says from now on do this, that's the antidote. Okay. So the fangs are the antidote. I've told you before, these things here that we have are Our teeth are fangs. Ordained people live in the jaws of death. It's a nice reminder, you know, we're going to die in practice. And then he says, sink the fangs deep within the flesh of this, my hated foe. The hated foe is self-cherishing. Next verse, I call on the king of secret knowledge and secret words that work to torture all these enemies. There is no freedom here in the woods of this vicious circle of life. Take up in your hands the wheel of knives. Take up the wheel of karma. Speed to the side of my foe, the cruel one, the evil demon that he is. This grasping to myself, broken vows and promises, waster of my life and others, go and fetch him here. So we're telling Yamaka to go get this guy and bring him right here. And we're going to do something to him. So now our hero, who's our hero? Yeah, I bet it's us. We're the ones that have finally realized, right? And we are summoning Bhairava from us. Master Dharmarakshita was a great tantric practitioner, so a lot of this is tantra. And since it's not a secret teaching, I can tell you some of these things. Anyway, our hero, you know, has decided to summon a being who can destroy all of our bad tendencies. And by doing that, destroying our self-cherishing mind. Now, self-cherishing mind and ignorance go hand in hand. You know, if there wasn't any ignorance, that couldn't be a self-cherishing mind. But since there is ignorance, there is a self-cherishing mind. So, we tell Yamantaka, you know, to turn the crown of knives once again on the skull of this deceiver, our self-cherishing minds. We're taking this wheel that has been circling the young man, he's like taking it upon himself, and we're turning it against our self-cherishing mind, which of course is part of us too. But it's nice to just separate the things that we really don't want to be from the things we want to be. So, you know, he's standing, you know, like a god on widespread legs. This is where I am. Sort of like the Colossus of Rhodes in the ancient times, which apparently actually did exist. And ships could sail under this thing into whatever harbor.
Rhodos.
Yeah. Somewhere back there. His mouth is wide open, you know, his fangs are dripping blood and stuff like that. Saliva, when he breathes out or roars, you know, just goes everywhere. The roar is overpowering. And we're calling upon this guy to help us, to get rid of our self-cherishing mind. So, the point here is that we can get rid of our self-cherishing mind and our ignorance by keeping our book, by keeping our vows, for example. And that's powerful. You know, when we're shown how to do it, this is going to help. You know, this will end your suffering if you do it right. But our suffering has been going on since beginningless time. And it's not like we kind of turn a switch or blow out the candle. It ain't like that. it takes a lot of power behind that. And so Yamantaka is this deity that will do that. We become that. So what's this deity like? Fetch him, bring him, Lord of anger, Lord of death. Strike, strike now, strike this highest foe in his heart. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. So, we've got this Lojong text that all of a sudden has a very different flavor from the ones that we've been using before in the course. We've got the appearance of Yamantaka. Instead of this nice kind of cuddly lamb-like thing, you know, we've got this monster. Who's going to help us? You know, Geshe-la, well, there he is. That's a picture of him. Geshe-la says that this is the way the mind of compassion, the essence of compassion, appears to a self-cherishing mind. Our self-cherishing mind doesn't want to go out of existence. Mm-hmm. Compassion is going to make sure that it does. And this is the way that compassion appears to the self-cherishing mind. And I can't let you see that too much longer, but a little bit. That's a picture of the head. There are actually 9 heads there. You can see the 2 big eyes, which are method and wisdom. The fangs in this picture aren't very big, but they're there anyway, which are the 4 forces. And you saw the widespread legs up here. He's got 8 legs on each side. So that's the guy that we're asking. And this last verse gives us the framework that the remaining 50 or so verses before we begin to close the Lojong take. You know, we're calling on him with the roar of hell, you know, smash now the heart of my misperception, something like that. And Master Dharma Rakshita is going to be describing all the attributes that a self-cherishing mind takes on, so we can recognize it when it occurs. These are different than the karmic correlations. When a mental affliction begins to appear, we can train ourselves to this is a mental affliction coming up. It's my self-cherishing mind. You may not know what affliction's going to appear because they happen fairly quickly. But you can train yourselves to intercept it. All right, so I have all these heads and arms holding weapons, you know. The idea of calling on this monster like that, is what we really have to become. We have to become like Steven Seagal. We have to become like Rambo. All these guys that just take on supernatural stuff. The last Star Wars movie, which was I think episode 3, before the new one came out, starts off with this incredible battle at the beginning. I don't know how many ships there are falling out of the sky, shooting each other, things blowing up, blam, blam, blam. It's like that. That's the battle that has to be fought. It isn't like tut, tut, you know, behave yourself, self-cherishing mind. It isn't like that at all. It's blow it up, you know. I mean, you finally realize what's going on, and you're not going to say, you shouldn't have done that, you know. Okay, yeah, we've got all of that, blah, 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 blah. And now comes the good part. Hung, hung, Mighty angels, show your mystic power. Za, za. Force the enemy to swear his allegiance. Pet, pet. Break, I beg you, all my chains. Break and smash. Cut the ties that make me grasp. So this is where we're going. You know, strangling the guy, ripping his head off. You know, like people pull the heads of chickens off, that kind of thing. Get rid of it. Smashing, running through with swords, cut him in half, whatever it is. Do all that stuff. Get rid of it. You know, pet as a Sanskrit word that basically describes that sound, a big clap, like a clap of thunder, something like that. Pet, pet, you know. You can use thunder and lightning storms to visualize destruction of your mental afflictions. It's really kind of fun. Go out on the porch or something, you know, and do it. Come to me, angel of wrath, lord of death. Take this pitiful sack filled with five poisons, mired in the force of karma and afflictions, in this filth of the vicious cycle of life. Come, I beg you, come right now and rip this bag to shreds. The bag is the body of our self-cherishing self. Rip it to shreds. Get rid of it. So here's where he begins the descriptions of the self-cherishing self. Yeah, this is the next verse. He would escort me to the terrors of the three lower realms. I don't know enough to be afraid of him. I run to the things that would take me there. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He chases after happiness, but knows nothing of how to make it come. The slightest unpleasant thing is unbearable to him, and at the same time he's full of insatiable, wanting all the wrong things. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He's quick to want and slow to work. He does everything and finishes nothing. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He's quick to make new friends and slow to show consideration to the ones he has. His aspirations are limited to food, and he's ready on a moment's notice to steal, to covet, to fly into a fury. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. And when the tantricas are gathered sometimes, we sometimes talk about this. The expression we use about this phrase, with a, you know, roar of hell, stuff like that, this greatest butcher, what we're talking about, we say, is you motherfucking son of a bitch. You know, it's not, that'd be nice. It's got to be that thing. That's the one who has kept us in samsara, that sent us to the hell realms over and over and over and over again. And now we've got him, instead of he having us. He's a master at trying to get things out of others through flattery and sweet hints. But he still talks bad about everyone. He's ready in a minute to make a buck, but he's so cheap that he has, that what he has is glued to his pockets. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He makes a great show of the troubles he takes to help others in some insignificant way. At the same time, he's dying for a way to help himself without any trouble at all. With a roar of hell, smash down the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He has lots of big llamas and lots of inability to keep any of the pledges that they give him. He has lots of students following him and lots of inability to give them any real help when they need it. With a roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He's sworn himself to every great deed and actually accomplished practically nothing that is any help to others. He's famous, but if you look closely, the angel that he thinks he is was kidnapped by a devil. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. The breadth of his spiritual learning is about zero, but his talk is big and meaningless. The breadth of his spiritual study is about zero, but still he's had a million realizations of realizing nothing. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He has many attendants following in his wake, and not one who takes any responsibility. He has many princely sponsors, but not one he can count on to help. No one to support him. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He holds the highest of positions and has less qualification than the devil himself. He is a high holy lama, but his anger and desire are crueler than any demons. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. His philosophy is exquisite, and the way he lives his life is worse than any dog's. The fine outer qualities that you see are many, but the inside core has gone to rot. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He cherishes great hopes and plans deep within his heart. The people around him waste their time in meaningless amusements. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He dons his saffron robes and goes to the devil for refuge. He swears to sacred vows and acts like an unholy demon. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. Happiness is a gift of the angels, but he makes his offerings to the evil spirits of pain. Guidance comes from the Dharma itself, but he cheats the triple gem. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He takes up permanent residence in a monastery, and his mind is permanently wandering somewhere else. He receives holy teachings in the scriptures, then wastes his time in fake fortune-telling. and spiritual quackery. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He throws away the idea of living an ethical life, the way to freedom itself, and instead settles down in the house where he grew up. His happiness is swept downstream while he goes chasing pain. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. On the very threshold of freedom, he turns to wander off somewhere in the boondocks. He finally stumbles across the precious jewel of a human life and uses it to travel to hell. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He drops his investment in the Dharma that pays a millionfold and runs to chase other profits of the business world. He leaves behind the garden of learning at the side of his lama and runs instead to town. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He could learn to feed himself forever, but he drops it and lives off taking money meant for the Dharma instead. He could have dinner in his father's house, but he drops it and steals things from others. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. You know, at least as I'm reading these things, every time I sit down and do it, I'll read a verse and, oh, that's so-and-so. It's easy. Donald Trump is a big thing right now, right? Hillary Clinton, and you know, all the political stuff that's going on. Oh, that's that. That's who that is describing us. We've been Donald Trump. We've been whatever, zillions of times. You know, that's why we can recognize it, because it's here. And so it's the self-cherishing mind, then it's really easy to say, oh, yeah, that's this other guy they're describing, you know, and forget that. It's us. This is, we finally realized this. But even, you know, 30 seconds later, it's talking about somebody else and not me. We have to be careful with that. It's amazing. He has no patience to do his meditation, but somehow, he's already gained an advanced form of clairvoyance. We were just talking about that word. He's failed to take the very first step of the path itself, but he's reached the mystical power to move himself miles in minutes. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. If you give him some advice from the heart, truly meant to help him, he turns on you as an enemy in anger. But if you mislead him with some sweet talk, he lavishes you with gratitude for nothing that you gave. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. If you take him into your confidence, he tells you your innermost secrets. If you take him into your confidence, he tells your innermost secrets to all those who hate you. If you get too intimate with him, he shamelessly relieves you of your pants and shirt. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. His temper is short, and his mind is filled with negative doubts of others. It's hard to be around him, and his heart is dark all day. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. If you slip up with him, and he says something unpleasant and finds ways to hurt you behind your back. If you get too close to him, he shows you his lack of respect. If you get some distance from him, he attacks you from afar. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. Having a discussion with him is an unpleasant experience. He's always difficult to be around. He has all these plans of how to hurt others, and he never forgets a wrong. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He's acutely aware of your status, and he feels as though those people who are truly spiritual are his foes. He's full of thoughts and of desire, and so happily takes himself to those in the bloom of youth. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. His ability to sustain a relationship is limited, so he leaves his old friends far behind. He chases after new friends. He makes all of them big promises and doesn't help anyone much. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He has no clairvoyance, so he gets by with made-up lies. He has no compassion, so his attention is fixed on himself. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. His learning is little, so he's an impediment to all. His study of scripture, too, is small. So he has wrong ideas about just about everything. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He has trained himself to be a master in liking and disliking. And so he speaks badly of everyone else. He has trained himself to be a master in the art of jealousy. So he puts down other people. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He has no great desire for spiritual learning, and so he disregards those who have great knowledge. He doesn't know how to relate to his lama, so he says bad things. So he says bad things about what the holy books say. With the roar of hell, smash down the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He doesn't teach the scriptures. Instead, he concocts some fake thing of his own. He hasn't trained himself to see the world as pure, so he always has to exaggerate. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He doesn't know enough to attack those ways of living that contradict the Dharma. Instead, he thinks up 1,000 reasons why exquisite sacred words must all be something mistaken. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He doesn't feel at all ashamed in situations that call for shame, and yet he feels embarrassed when he's doing something he should. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. He never does a single thing of those things that he should. He always does all of those things that he should never have. That's straight out of St. Paul, right? I have done those things I ought not to have done, and I have not done those things I ought to have done. That's my favorite line of the Mass, by the way. You know, just before you take communion, it's... Okay, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the ones who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. Come now, you of mystic light, Lord of the body of emptiness. Bring a being of bliss who shatters this hateful evil demon of grasping to some self. With the roar of hell, smash now the skull of my misperceptions, the one who have wasted my life. Bring your death to the heart of this butcher, my greatest enemy. Come with mighty wrath and make blood sacrifice of my foe. Come with mighty wisdom and destroy my wrong ideas. Come with mighty compassion and shelter me from my karma. Come, I beg you, obliterate with finality this self. Take all the pain in the entire world and lay it at the doorstep of the one whose fault that all of it really is. This tendency that I have of grasping to myself, and lay upon his doorstep too every single mental affliction, every single one of those five poisons of the mind that any single living being has within their heart. And so I have used the art of reasoning to learn with certainty who it is that lies behind every problem in my life. And if by chance he should arise once more and come to struggle to convince me of his view, then I beg you, come and lay him to waste in the middle of his eloquence. And so all the blame there could ever be belongs to him and him alone. Think of the kindness that every living creature around you shows to you. Pray that you could take upon yourself the problems of every living thing. Take every good thing that you have ever done and offer it to their happiness. So now may I take upon myself all the bad karma committed by others in the past and now and in the future, in their thoughts or words or deeds. Help me be a peacock with all those exquisite designs, the colors that come from poison, woven into her feathers. Let me turn my mental afflictions into opportunities for reaching Buddhahood. By giving away the store of goodness within me to others like this, may all of them be cured, like crows that have eaten poison, but taken then medicinal herbs. May I thus save the life of their freedom. May I thus save the life of their freedom for every being, and may they quickly reach the state of being of bliss, the enlightenment of a Buddha. So that's the main part of the Lojong. We found out what's going wrong with us. We realized that that's us. We called upon Yamantaka to get rid of that self-cherishing self. We then enumerate all the ways the self-cherishing self operates so we can recognize it when it happens. And now we ask Yamantaka, us, you know, to help every other living being. Let me take their pain and turn it into their happiness. So now there are some closing prayers. And for whatever time remains in the days before... Actually, this is a good time for a break, so why don't we do that? 3, 4, 5, 6 verses verses of dedication that we're going to do now. And then he has several pages of what our perceptions are going to be like when we get rid of the self-cherishing mind. And then some other things in there too. And for whatever time remains, in the days before myself and those who are my parents have reached our enlightenment, in the heaven below no other. The heaven below no other, it's Okmin in Tibetan. And a lot of the deities live up there, the Buddhas. May all of us, as we wander together, driven by karma through six worlds, love and cherish one another, love and cherish each other as one. And in those days as well, may I find the strength to dwell alone within the three realms of misery. If this world be of service to a single other being, may I find the strength to never give up this bodhisattva behavior. May I draw into my being the suffering all those feel in the three lower realms of pain. And in the very moment after I arrive in the realms of hell, may the hell guards look upon me and see me as their holy lama. May the rains of weapons they release upon me turn into a shower of blooms before they land. May I stand untouched. May peace and bliss then spread throughout my heart. And then too, may those beings tortured there in the three lower realms achieve the power of clairvoyance and of sacred secret spells. May their bodies suddenly transform into those of humans and deities. And suddenly may their minds be filled with the wish for enlightenment. In this moment, may I repay their kindness with the gift of the holy Dharma. May they take me as their lama and commit themselves to my care. And in this moment too, may every single being within the three higher realms begin to meditate on the emptiness of a self, just as I do, myself. May they never feel the slightest urge for the extremes of this vicious cycle or a lower personal peace. May they be with me, and may we together perfect our meditations. May they be with me, and may we together find our real nature. If you and I can do this together, the foe will be defeated. If you and I can do this together, our misconceptions will be destroyed, and we will meditate together on the wisdom that sees no self. And we will both together attain what brings us the body of voidness. And now he starts to talk about what our perceptions are going to be like. Think now. Everything we see is something that happens from something else. Understanding that everything comes from something else is to see that nothing exists by itself alone. Things come, things go, but nothing is what it seems. Everything is an illusion. The face in a mirror is no face itself. When you spin a burning stick and see a solid crimson circle, it's only as real as an image seen in a looking glass. Life is like a stick of bamboo. Its inner essence is nothing. The things around us are like a morning mist. When you come up close enough, there's nothing you could touch. The world is like a desert mirage, lovely, but only from afar. It all seems real, so very real, like a face within a mirror. It all seems solid, so very solid, like a cloud or a bank of fog. This butcher, my ultimate enemy, is exactly the same as well. He seems to be there. He so much seems to be there. but no one is there at all. He seems to be real, so very real, but nothing is real at all. Everything seems to be happening here. It so much seems to be happening here, but nothing is what I made it to be. It's far beyond that. There is no wheel of karma here at all. Nothing is anything. Nothing is this or that. It looks like the moon itself is floating in your teacup. The things we do and their consequences float by in the multitude of things in the world around us. I beg you now, be careful. Do the things you should, and give up the things you shouldn't, if only in a movie. Within a dream, you see this earth enveloped in the fire that marks the end of the world. The fire has no reality, but in the dream, your heart begins to race. The realms of hell and the rest as well have no reality of their own. But still, I beg you, feel now terror that you yourself could very well pass and burn there in the flame. Do what you must now, not to go. It happens sometimes that in broad daylight, not on some dark night or the like, you make a miscalculation and end up miles from where you wanted to be. Wandering here and there, blown like autumn leaves, the emotions of ignorance and the rest may have no reality of their own, but still they can lead you astray, and still they can be removed from your mind by the three forms of holy wisdom. A master musician may please your heart by crafting a beautiful tune, but if you really examine the song, it's just a pile of sounds without any special identity that comes from its own side. And despite the fact that this is the case, the song can nonetheless bring us joy and save us from some sadness. Assuming that we simply sit back and enjoy the whole without dissecting it into its component parts. If you carefully examine and analyze karma and its consequences, you find that these have no nature of being even one thing or many. From their own side alone, things can still start, things can still stop, if only in an illusory way. You know that things start, and you know that things stop, as if they were really there. And so I bid you be careful. Do those things that you should, and give up those things you shouldn't, if only in a movie. Think of filling a water pitcher with single drops of water. The pitcher isn't filled up when the first drop drops. Neither is it the last drop that fills it, nor any other of the drops alone. It's when the whole is done, when things that come from others have come from the others, that the pitcher is filled. So he's going through here parts of Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom, you know, the logic that whatever it is we think the world is like is not the case. You know, there is no such thing as time. There is no such thing as motion. There is no such thing as karma. There is no such thing as the 12 links of dependent origination, and so on and so on. But yet, there still is stuff. And how is that to be? It's just the same whenever we experience the results of our previous actions, whether it's pleasure or pain. It's not the first instant of the cause that brings us the result, nor is it the last or one of the rest. It's when the whole is done, when things that come from others have come from the others, that we feel the pain or pleasure. And so I beg you, be careful. Do those things that you should and give up those things you shouldn't, if only in a movie. Even if you're only in a movie, keep your vows. That's what he's saying. He didn't have a lot of movies back in Dharma Raksha's time. You know,
poor guy.
Do you see? If you don't go too far into it, if you leave things alone as they are, they appear quite well as if they existed. Though in truth, this very appearance never had any essence of its own. This teaching is profound, something that those of lesser minds find difficult to grasp. Suppose now that you go into a deep meditation upon these things. You would never be able to find a thing as solid as it seems. You would never be able to say that any particular thing existed or didn't exist. You would never be able to swear that something was or wasn't something. Neither the things that the mind perceives nor the mind itself have any real nature of their own. There is nothing you should practice. There is nothing you should give up. Strip everything of your perceptions. Leave your mind as it came from the beginning that never was. Don't confuse things by trying to understand them. Live in the place called as it is, and then you will become a high and holy being. These are very dangerous lies. You know, it's easy to go back as a kind of thing, you know, as it is. Ah, I like that. Live in as it is. Where's the next joint, you know? You must always understand, you know, these lines from a point of view of emptiness. You know, it's so interesting watching the Rolling Stones up here. They looked so fresh and innocent.
Yeah.
You know. Mick Jagger's always kind of interested me. I thought his singing has been kind of gross. His pitch was absolutely perfect on every note that he sang in that thing. And he was jumping all over the place. I had no idea he could do that. And the rest of them too. They're just doing their stuff and it's really amazing. Why am I saying that? If only in the movie, something like that, you know. We have to come from a point of view of emptiness, always. Since there is no other way that things exist except by our karma for us right now, we have to keep our vows if we want to get out of samsara. The vows are the thing that power the changing of our mind by changing our behavior. So if we don't want to go to hell, despite what the person next to you at work says that you should do, the only thing we can do is change the way we act and think. Realizing that none of this exists from its own side anyway. Not even the fact that emptiness is empty comes from its own side. That's the way things really are. But not really. And we have to also resist the logical conclusion from that nothing exists at all. And that's the tough part. And we have to use others to do it. I love those lines, you know, we'll do this together. The only way it can work is if you and I work together. You know, that's the way it works. Leave your mind as it came. What's that?
Perfect?
Yes.
So the emptiness of the mind. The emptiness of the mind?
Yes. It's called the primordial nature. We discuss this now and then. And the primordial nature seems to be perfect. But it's the fact that the mind comes out of emptiness, out of nothingness. You know, in quantum theory, apparently, it is possible for all the stuff in the universe to come out of a state of nothingness. It's one of four or five possibilities. And that seems extraordinary to me. Now, we're not talking about the mind coming out of that kind of nothingness, but we are talking about the mind coming out of that kind of nothingness. Emptiness has to be perfect. Yeah, if you don't get the, you don't get it. Jeffrey Hopkins was explaining some deep aspect of emptiness to, it may have been students at the University of Virginia. It may have been professors of emptiness, you know, at universities who really don't practice Buddhism. But he was going on about that, and he stopped and he said, if this doesn't scare the shit out of you, you haven't understood it. So, yeah. Don't feel bad if you get like this. It means you're making progress. You know, don't think you're stupid. Do not think you're stupid.
It means work hard on your mind and leave it as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good. The Buddhist definition of mind is, well, actually, it's awareness, but that which is clear and knowing. Clear, you know. We say instead that the mind is obscured by itself, maybe. No, not by itself, but, you know, there's nothing wrong.
I like that. It's obscured by itself.
Yeah, yeah. I was telling you about the first Buddhist thing I went to was a Sakya empowerment, and the Lama gave a little talk. And one of the things that was clear to me, it was kind of an overcast day in San Francisco area. And he said, you know, it's overcast today. We can't see the sun, but it's there, shining. We just can't see it. And that's a good metaphor for the mind, for us. It's clear. Emptiness, the real nature of things, is there. It's always been there. It's never been any other way. We just can't see it. Understand it. We just don't understand that. So that's the idea of primordial mind, you know. Now, leave your mind as it came. The misunderstanding of this is that the mind is, in fact, pure. All right? It's gotten a little bit dirty somehow. We just sort of polish it up, we'll be fine. That's wrong. The mind isn't the problem. Well, it is the problem. But it's the self-cherishing mind. But the self-cherishing mind isn't the mind because the self-cherishing mind doesn't exist. It's an illusion due to ignorance. Remember the guy with the walking stick? Doesn't know. I don't know if you can see it. He's a meter from a cliff.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Oh, live in the place called as it is. Okay. Where is it? Oh, it's a bar down, you know, something like that. What does that mean as it is? It means ultimate reality. So he's encouraging us to live in ultimate reality, which means becoming a Buddha. Use this way to analyze the apparent wish for enlightenment and the ultimate one as well. With these, then, you can amass the collection of merit and wisdom without the slightest obstacle and come to the perfect accomplishment of every single need that you and others have. And this is the prayer that we end teachings with. Sonam Yeshe, merit and wisdom. May we gain the collections of merit and wisdom that produce the bodies of the Buddha. So that's the crown of knives. The most amazing, did we have amazing category yet? It's the most amazing Lojong work. I encourage you to spend some time with these verses. Like maybe take a verse a night, for a week, meditate on a verse every night that week, or morning, whenever you do them. If you meditate in the morning, you could just meditate on the verse at night. Not when you're tired. It's not like the coffee meditation, where it's kind of nice to meditate on all the good things you've done because it's me. That kind of me is not so bad. But just spend some time with them. You know, how does it resonate? It's okay to say, okay, this is about Donald Trump or whatever. Always taking it back to, well, but I've been that way too. How am I that way? You know, you may find that in this life, excuse me, you haven't had that kind of behavior. And there'll be plenty that way too. But just know that you've done that in the past. At least for this life, you've purified yourself of that karma before you came into this life. Thank Joe, you know, when that happens. That's very important too. And it's okay in the coffee meditation to just be thankful for being alive, having this opportunity to try to get enlightened. It was very important. Any questions?
In the last section, he was talking about us and we. And I didn't get the
about us and
who is who,
we
or you and I. He said you and I.
Right, that means the you is everybody else, mm-hmm. and the I is me. Mm-hmm. So it's Yamajika talking, it's Dharma Rakshati talking, it's us talking. Mm-hmm. You know, we're reading this, we're practicing it, we're meditating on it, we're contemplating on it. When I say meditate, contemplation works really well. And if you're tired, by the way, you shouldn't meditate really, but you can contemplate. That's okay. Why shouldn't you meditate? Because you'll go to sleep and get the karma for going to sleep when you meditate. The habit, all right?
Yeah.
Very, very important. Find those little things so you can stay awake.